Worms.
I can do it. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We allow your locus ceruleus. We alter your locus ceruleus.
We are your locus ceruleus.
By warming your synapses with rejuvenative. Rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 120 kelvins to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it, Michael? Can you feel it, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yes. Excellent. You know, we've already got a show title if we don't come up with one. We are your locus ceruleus.
That works.
What does that control? Doesn't that control, like, muscle functions and stuff? Like, I was thinking, I wanted a part of the brain that sounded cool when I was writing that, and I looked up parts of the brain, and I... Kevin McKernan wrote me, our DNA scientist friend who worked on the... who worked on the Human Genome Project and who came to full voluntarism through the Freedom Fiends. He was one of those, like, I don't think he never listened to Rush Limbaugh, but he was like, you know, Alex Jones, Ron Paul, Freedom Fiends. And hey, I'm not saying anything bad about Ron Paul. I'm just saying we're a little smaller government than him in that we want government so small it's theorized about by particle physicists. We also didn't back Trump. But hey, anybody who gets people to distrust any government is a friend of mine. So Alex Jones, I tip my hat to you, our label mate. Yeah. And so what's up, guys?
Oh, not much. You're still buffering a little bit.
I'm buffering?
Just
buffering?
So you know. Yeah. Much better than you were before, but just a little tiny.
Well, I'll fix it. So what's up, guys? Tell me.
Well, I can tell you my locus ceruleus is thoroughly toasty right now. But
oh, you're in a hot room. Hot boxing. Yeah.
Yeah, hot boxing.
Start doing some yoga while you're at it.
What was that?
I said you might as well start doing some yoga while you're at it. You already got the temperature cranked up. Just go for it, man. Oh, get a nice good workout. You feel much better.
Actually, I might do that. I've on a yoga kick.
I mean, cool.
I haven't been doing any in a while, but I think I've told that story on the air before. That's actually how I got over my aversion to the heat, was doing that Bikram yoga for like 6 months to a year. And after doing that, you know, once or twice a week for that long period, heat doesn't bother me anymore.
Really?
Wow. Well, because if you could tolerate doing yoga in a room that's set at 108 degrees and you're crammed in there with 30 or 40 other people for an hour and a half, so the temperature actually rises to somewhere close to 120-ish, if you can do an hour and a half yoga session in that, you can tolerate anything, man. It's really not that bad.
I don't know if I can handle that. I'm more of a cold room yoga guy. About 60.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh. I didn't finish my story about Kevin McKernan. I interrupted myself. I hijacked myself. But Kevin McKernan told me, he's like, what do you think that part of the brain does? And I'm like, you know, I think it's the part that controls your destiny, you know, like the deepest. I thought it was a smart part of the brain. It's actually kind of a dumb part of the brain. I think it controls like breathing and digestion. And
the dumb part.
You know, the dumb part that just keeps breathing. Everything from stopping. Yeah. You know, when I was sick last year, I had this vision. Actually, before that, I've had this vision because I've always had a love-hate relationship with air and breathing and oxygen because I've had asthma since I was a really little kid, and it got a lot better after puberty, which is really common. But by then, I was smoking, so it slowly got a lot worse over the years in the background. I kind of denied it until I just collapsed and had to quit smoking, get on oxygen, all that. And I'm a bit better than I was a couple years ago, but I've always had this kind of feeling, and I feel this sometimes when I'm falling asleep, that my last thoughts, my last words, like in my brain to myself, are going to be, you know, when I finally stop breathing, but I'm still conscious and, you know, am not fighting it and dying surrounded by loved ones and cats at 95, and I've buried you all. And my last thought is going to be breathing. I'm so tired of that. I'm glad that's over. Which is weird because I remember there was a, I don't know if I talked about this on the show or not. A while back, there was a lady who had a lung transplant, and this was a medical first that she, they removed her lungs because they were eating her alive or something, lung cancer. I don't know what it was, but they removed her lungs, and she lived for 6 days without lungs until they got her a donor. So they were like, you know, washing her blood and putting oxygen in it and taking out carbon dioxide. So her chest was not going up and down for 6 days, and she was alive and awake, wow, you know, on a lot of drugs. But, can you imagine that? It's such a weird thought to, like, you know, that you're in a bed, like in your body, looking down, and your chest isn't going up and down. Wouldn't that be weird?
That's pretty
creepy.
Well,
I would assume she was out. Wouldn't she have been?
I think she's in a medically induced coma, but I'm guessing. Yeah. But if she wasn't, that'd be pretty strange. It'd be pretty strange to see someone, you know, to be a nurse or a doctor, just seeing this living person. Because, I don't know, it's just so basic to life to see lungs moving, working.
Well, yeah, it's kind of an involuntary reaction most of the time.
Yeah.
That would be freaky, though, even if you were able to wake up for, like, just a little bit during that period and just kind of look. Yeah. It would be kind of like, how do I tell if I'm alive or dead? This is so weird.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you'd listen to the machines peeping and beeping. Yeah, and I have that central sleep apnea, which is, you know, in addition to normal sleep apnea, which is physical, you know, a lot of people have sleep apnea. It's where you stop breathing sometimes in your sleep and go and wake up and start breathing. And, you know, people with sleep apnea, it's often because you're fat, but I've had it since I was skinny. Like, I remember, you know, being 25 and in shape for a smoker, and, you know, people sleeping next to me when I wake up going, like, man, several times during the night, you know, you just stop breathing, and you usually kind of, like, coughed and, you know, yawned and a little bit, and a couple times I pushed you to wake you up. So sleep apnea is just, you know, the windpipe in your throat closing, either from overweight, or a lot of times people who are not overweight, even fit people, can have it. It's just something wrong with your body. But I also have that's sleep apnea. I also have central sleep apnea, which is my brain doesn't want to send the impulses to my brain stops telling my body to breathe sometime, which is, you know, some would argue God wants me dead, but thanks to modern medical science, you know, I sleep with a machine that it's like CPAP, but instead of just providing pressure, which is what they have for normal apnea, which keeps your throat open. I have that, but the machine also, like, kicks air to me and becomes life support when I stop. And when I went to the sleep study, she said, you know, there's an AHI, it's apnea something index, and, you know, like, most people probably have, like, you know, one event every couple hours, like healthy people, where they'll have a little bit of apnea and they go and start breathing. Bad apnea is like 30 to 50 an hour, which is a lot. I mean, 30 an hour, that's, you know, every 2 minutes you're stopping breathing for 5 or 10 seconds. I had 148 per hour. And the lady said it was the most she'd ever seen, and she does sleep studies for a living. So I'm just saying, it's a miracle I'm here, people, and I'm happy. I'm happy to be on radio because I'm happy to be anywhere.
You're not paranoid if your brain is trying to kill you.
you're like the blonde that died at the barbershop.
What?
You know that joke?
No.
Yeah, so there's a blonde that goes into a barbershop, and she's wearing these headphones, and the barber asks her, well, can you take the headphones off? She says, no, I need them. Can you just cut around them? And the barber tries to cut around them, but finally she just gets fed up and takes the headphones off of the girl and throws them on the ground and starts commencing with her job. Well, a few minutes later, the blonde just keels over dead. So what happens is the barber goes to the headphones and she puts them on to listen to them, and they say, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, I get it. I used to like blonde jokes, being a blonde. Do you know blonde is the only word in the English language? You know how, like, French and other languages have a masculine and feminine form, and you have to know whether to say le or la, and yes, L or la? English only has one of those, and it's blonde, and it's a loan word from French, but it's blonde with an E for women and blonde without the E for men. It's the only one.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a differentiation in the spelling.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's kind of like, you know, doesn't get done enough to where the market has decided it doesn't need to be done. Kind of like who and whom, you know, people, linguists and people that like language and want to tell you what to do. You know, I mean, I'll correct someone if they say it, I-T-S, for possessive, which is ridiculous, which is really common. Also really common is putting apostrophe S for making things plural, which is incorrect, even if they're abbreviations. Like CDs is not C, capital C, capital D, apostrophe S. It's small s. It's capital C, capital D, small s. And a lot of people make that mistake. But that kind of stuff, you know, here, there, you know, Selby said, you don't need that. You can, like, he never used apostrophes for anything, for the most part, unless it was absolutely required for context. But, yeah, there's a lot of people who cling to a lot of things because they say, you know, a difference between a dialect and a language is a dialect. A language is a dialect with an army, which basically means there's guns or force behind it telling this is the official way. And a really common one is using is demanding that people use who or whom, when in fact, and this isn't just like the bastardization of language, it's more like just from common usage is so overwhelming that whom is considered archaic by a lot of people, and a lot of smart people too, which is not an appeal to authority. It's, you know, even but people who study this kind of stuff are kind of like, yeah, you don't really need to use who or whom anymore. Just
I feel so
who.
Much better because I trip over myself trying to figure out which one I'm supposed to use half the time whenever I'm writing, and I'm writing who or whom. I fight with myself in my head and go, all right, which one am I supposed to use here? So
okay, if anyone ever corrects you, you can say Michael Dean told me.
There we go.
That you're wrong. And
you
then just
are wrong.
They just call me on the phone and hand the phone to someone, and I'll yell at them for you.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
Whom are you to tell me when to use the word?
Yes. So the other one that really bugs me that's wrong to correct people is saying you can't end a sentence with a proposition. Preposition, because that is something that the guy who used to make the dictionaries made up. Yeah, meow. And it's like there's no reason for it. One guy just said it 200 years ago, and people have been parroting it. Meow.
Meow that.
Webster. Noah Webster.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media is not easy, but it is effective. Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media doesn't even pay very much at all. Sometimes we even have to pay out of our own pockets. But we do it because we have to. For you. And for the children. Here at the Freedom Fiends, we've been producing amazing and effective Liberty Media every day since 2011. Radio shows, podcasts, movies, music, cryptocurrencies, and yes, even memes. The Freedom Fiends also run the world's only Liberty Media Teaching Hospital and the world's only voluntarist media university. Our hands-on classes educate and shape hundreds of the great Liberty speakers of today and tomorrow, and they in turn will teach and inspire others. Heck, even the ones who got fired or quit in a huff still hold useful skills and equipment to hone their own Liberty Media and teach others. Freedom Fiends Media and our students' media is a rising groundswell to help create happy Liberty lives around the world and maybe even on to Alpha Centauri. Kitty cats and puppies like living in Liberty homes more than in statist homes. So please donate to the Freedom Fiends, if only for the kitties. Hashtag please donate Freedom Fiends. Think of the kitties.
Yeah, Bernie supporters are probably easier to flip to Liberty than you know, Hillary supporters. They're all crazy, but
At least,
you know,
they know there's corruption when they see it.
And at least they're not gonna like become alt-righters and back Trump, like some so-called libertarians.
Right.
So we got several new fiends coming on here, and I'm really psyched about it. One started last week.
Last year.
Shane Buell. He was great. He was probably best for a show, or one of the best for shows of anyone I've ever heard. Like, he even knows the intros and had them memorized better than me, than I do. Better than I.
Wow. He is a fan, so
yep,
that makes
yep
sense.
You know, it's kind of like when...
Up there when you go again.
Buffering?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like when Public Image Limited, the band starring John Lydon, formerly Johnny Rotten of the Sex Pistols, when he started this band, Public Image Limited, when they did their first record, they went on tour, and he was, you know, they were nobodies, and he plucked them out of obscurity, and, well, actually, they weren't. One of them was Ja Wobble, who was in a lot of reggae bands, but Ja, J-A-H, Wobble. Which I think is a reference to doing speed, like your jaw wobbles, but it's jaw wobble. So his band, like, wanted more money. You know, he was getting way more money than they were. And so he fired them all and replaced them the next day with a Public Image Limited cover band from New Jersey. I thought that was pretty funny.
That's how you do it, man.
That's how you do it with the Fiends, too, is you know, along the way, you encourage all these people to start podcasts. You teach them what mic to get. You tell them how to start a podcast. They start a podcast, and then you know, Fiends leave, and you go, "Hey, you want to step up to the majors? Want to go to the show?" Yeah, and you know, they're ready because they've heard it all the time. You know, I was saying that I talk about how the Fiends is a teaching hospital. Freedom Fiends, our show, is a teaching hospital, and it's a kind of like, you know, punk rock university for doing radio, and it's taught a lot of people. And I have one of the ads actually says that, you know, even people who've quit the Fiends in a huff still have valuable knowledge and equipment to spread liberty in the world. And it's true. But I have said now that you graduate from Freedom Fiends Audio University by quitting or being fired. And then if you come back, like Jeremy, you have tenure. Jeremy,
I was gonna say, where's my gown and cap, man? I graduated.
Hey, I don't care what you wear while you're doing the show. We're not videoing. Oh. I don't have to see it.
Well, I can't wear the cap because it interferes with my headphones. So, you know.
Yep. But we got a really cool new feed. We got Daryl Becker coming on soon. He got his equipment now. But we have a really neat fiend who's probably starting. Who I'm in talks with right now, and it's Knight. It's Anthony Constantino is his name, but he goes by Knight, and he is Nima Vedati's little brother.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he's actually been on the show a few times when he was like 12 or 13. We had a couple, I think 2 years in a row, we had a Freedom Fiends Christmas special where it was like me, Nima, Nima's two brothers and Nima's mother. They were all like in the same room, so they did the show together, and he was great. And he's now 17, and, you know, he's a rapper. He has a mic, although I'm going to get him a better mic. He doesn't have the right mic. But he's going to probably become a fiend. So it's a dynasty now. So we're training the next generation of Nima siblings. That'll be cool.
Well, then we need to keep the fiends going at least long enough till one of the Biptots
gets to one of the too. Biptots. Yeah, then you can teach them. When they turn 12, you can start having them on.
Yeah. Well, they know enough to ask me about it now. Like tonight, they were here for the weekend, and earlier my one daughter was asking me, you know, Daddy, are you doing your show tonight? And I'm like, yes, sweetie. She's like, oh, okay, that means we're not going to be here, right? I'm like, yes, sweetie. It makes it much easier on Daddy when you're not here when he does a show.
Wow.
They know enough to ask.
I thought you were going to say she asked if she was going to be on the show.
Oh, no.
That's next year.
Yeah, next year, I'm sure.
She'll... Yeah.
Well, I think if we did video, she'd be more into that because they do find that funny if I was ever on a Skype chat with anybody and they can walk by, you know, they see themselves.
They photobomb you.
Yeah, pretty much. So they think that's funny. This is probably too boring for them because it's just talking. There's no pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just talking, no pictures is better, though. I think,
I do.
You know, like adding video to a podcast or to a talk that people listen to, it only makes sense if you're a really cute woman. Then you get a lot of extra views, and, you know, you might actually spread to people who aren't just there to look at you, but they got, you know, someone forwarded or shared your video because, oh, look at this hot chick. But it's really bizarre to me when libertarians do it because it's like, first of all, the audio's bad, like on Google Hangouts. Yeah, meow.
Oh, God.
Secondly, it's just like four dudes, you know, with neck beards vaping. I don't need to see that. I can just listen to that.
Exactly.
Worms. Yeah. My, how time flies.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny. DJ, how do you like the fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT. .org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers, and there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
Yep. Yeah. There should be an app for that. There should be an app. So we were talking during the radio break that there's this thing called the buff dump on our proprietary free software that anyone can use called Fiend Phone. This sounds better than Skype that we use. It's got a button called the buff dump. If the buffer gets too full, you can hit it and buff dump. And we said some various things it might mean. And then one was, you know, like a woman who goes through a lot of men, her buff weightlifters, it's where she throws them when she's done with them on the buff dump. I was thinking, why isn't there an app that just, when you're sick of somebody, just blocks them everywhere on all your accounts? There should be.
I'd be surprised if there isn't.
I mean, it would have to take, I wouldn't use it because it would have to take over control of all your accounts and have, you know, full access to them, basically. But, you know... And then there could be a service too for like recovering drug addicts, to where you know, your phone like senses, like as soon as you pull the needle out of your arm when you relapse, it just like cuts your phone goes dead, you know, all the stuff that's going to happen in a couple weeks anyway, you know, your house lock, your landlord instantly changes your electronic locks, your girlfriend dumps you, you know, your car gets repossessed, yeah.
Well, is that really gonna do anything? Because in that moment, are you really going to care? Once the needle's already out, do you really care?
No, man.
You're just like, I'll just deal with that when I come back.
yeah. You know, it's kind of like trying to lose weight by, you know, putting things on your refrigerator that says, "Hey, fatty," or something like that. You know, you don't care in the moment because people are, you know, creatures of comfort, and I don't know.
Well, some people do. Some people that shaming thing works. Self-shaming works. Other people not so much.
People that can delay gratification.
Yeah,
I'd like to praise the fact that the phrase "there should be a law" is slowly being replaced with "there should be an app."
Is it? Oh yeah, I see what you mean. It's not.
I hear
though.
It more often.
It's being replaced in how common it is, but it's not replacing it. It should replace it, though. It really should replace it. Because, for instance, the app Cell 411 can replace a lot of laws.
I was going to say, there actually is an app for that.
Do better than a lot of laws. Cell 411 is a free app that you can get for Android or iPhone. And it allows you to set up a cell of friends that, if you're in trouble, you press a button. You can even get they even have panic buttons, like, you know, the "I've fallen and I can't get up" button that goes on your wrist or around your neck, and Jeremy has one.
I do.
And it sends out an alert and your GPS location to your cell of friends.
And yes, and we accidentally tested mine, and it worked great. I had a response from 95% of the people in my cell in less than a minute.
I was probably asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was a false alarm. Nice. It was a great test.
Did you immediately tell them false alarm? How did you do that?
Well, because I didn't notice it happened so quickly, but I got a message from somebody like literally 10 seconds later. Oh my God, what's going on? And I looked and saw what happened, and I immediately used the chat feature in cell 411 that connected to everybody in my cell. And
oh wow!
I put a message there, and everybody jumped on there right away and saw it. Oh, okay, good, a false alarm. But everybody's pretty much did the same thing. I'm so glad it was a false alarm. But hey, at least we know it works.
Yeah, and you know, for people that say like, "Well, you may criticize the police, but you'll be the first to call them when you need help." First of all, I won't. I'd call, you know, 911 for a medical emergency, but that can be done entirely. In some places, that's done entirely outside the government. You know, that's it routes to a private company that has private ambulances and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, like if someone's, like, let's say your ex-girlfriend is banging on your door and, you know, trying to break in, and she's crazy and she's armed, and, you know, you don't want to shoot her, or say she's not armed, but she's just trying to bang her way back into your life.
Or and just you, to make, make and a what? Scene. Or said, or just
yeah,
trying
to make
a scene.
You know, you could call, you know, five friends that live a few blocks away to come over, and if nothing else, witness it. You know, like film it from multiple angles. So if she does something to you, you have proof of it. You know, for your libertarian private court that you take her to afterwards. Yes. But there's a lot of other things. Like for instance, if you're being pulled over, you know, you can call people there to come and be a witness to anything. You know, it makes it a lot harder for the police to want to do something horrible and illegal to you. Medical emergency. Let's say you have an aunt or uncle who's a nurse and lives two doors down from you. This would be a lot, you know, and it'd be a lot quicker than calling them on the phone. And like, let's say you can't talk, you know, you just hit this button and they're there, things like that. Like people you trust that can get there a lot quicker than the government and won't shoot you when they get there. Because the government does that sometimes, you know. They show up and shoot the people who called them. Happens.
Yeah.
To people.
I just saw a story about that earlier. Somebody.
Yep.
Somebody was, well, I mean, like you said, it happens a lot. But
what are the details? You got some details?
I'm going to have to find it again.
Saw it today.
I literally just saw one today where somebody was called, it was a good Samaritan that ended up getting killed by the cops who was trying to help somebody else and they ended up coming and killing this guy instead. It was like, you know, I'll see if I could track it down during the next break. But yeah, it's literally I saw that today. So that does happen, unfortunately.
Hey, am I still buffering?
No, you sound good.
Yeah, so since we're at a teaching hospital, I'll tell you what I did. I switched to my DSL line. I have two internet lines because I live in Wyoming and internet's not good here. And, you know, it's all the internet accounts are down, you know, for each company is down a few hours a month and also has a lot of growing pains. Like when they're adding people, there'll be a few days where coverage is spot, where your home internet is kind of spotty. So actually, this is one of the reasons that you should donate to the Freedom Fiends, because I pay for two internet connections. And I have a router that's supposed to switch. If one cuts out, it's supposed to switch to the other one. But it doesn't really, it only does on or off. You know, it doesn't, if the internet's kind of spotty, it doesn't switch over. So I just unplugged the cable from the router. So it's just the DSL. And DSL, you'd think like, what? You mean like we used to use 25 years ago? Yeah, but it's enough bandwidth to run Fiend Phone, and it's actually more solid than cable. Because cable, when your neighbors are using it, you're all kind of splitting like, you know, like a block, you know, half a city block are all splitting like one tube, basically. And, you know, if there's 20 people on there watching Netflix at once out of your 40 neighbors or something, or even like 10 out of 40, sometimes it'll be a little crappy. So DSL is dedicated. You have a separate phone number for it, and it's, you know, you don't get much internet, but you get it all to yourself, and whatever your neighbors do doesn't affect it. So I switched over. So speaking of Roger Stone, so I didn't know that Roger Stone has a radio show, but so remember when we got kicked off of a radio show in Kentucky because somebody on the Freedom Fiends was making allusions to making sweet, sweet love with Tiffany Trump? You guys remember that?
We did not. Nope. It wasn't even an allusion to that. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you were talking about, say what it was.
Yeah, because it was me. I was one of those people. We were discussing the
trends.
The trends in pornography.
Statistics. It was before Phil was here, though, so it would have sounded, you wouldn't have gotten kicked off if Phil was here.
Yes.
Because he would have had some real hard math to back it up, and it would have like overshadowed. No, it wouldn't. They was too.
Yeah, we were discussing the yearly report that comes out from that industry about the trends in people's viewing habits and stuff, and it just so happened that because of the election cycle, there was a huge increase in different types of films created about people who look like the president's wife or his daughters, and that's what we were talking about. And we were trying, and like the entire time, we kept checking with the board op to make sure that we were staying within the bounds.
Oh wait, so you're saying the board op knows? Yeah, the board op was telling you what was FCC compliant.
Oh yeah, yeah. But you
not what was some really conservative station owner in Kentucky complaining.
Yeah, but we definitely didn't say the thing that they claim we were saying.
I'm
pretty sure neither of us made any allusions to
the email. I showed you the email.
Oh yeah, and I was like, wait,
they were talking about having sexual relations with Tiffany Trump. No, you weren't talking about that. But so here's the bizarre thing. I went and checked. Somebody like went to someone in that area listened to that station the other day, and in our slot, we've been replaced with Roger Stone's radio show.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So let's talk about who Roger Stone is and how absurd it is that someone who claims to love liberty and runs a station replaced us with Roger Stone. Roger Stone is a political active runs campaigns and has going back to Republican campaigns going back to what? Goldwater? Before Nixon?
Well, he was part of that group because he was very young when the Goldwater thing, but I think Nixon was his real first foray into it because he was still only 20 years old with Nixon
he's very proud of lying, and he's like 62 years old, I think, and he's kind of really fit, and he's like, you know, acts like a 21-year-old. Like, he's kind of got the ego and the drive and the like, yeah, I say things that aren't true. What are you going to do about it? And laughs about it. So there's a documentary about him called Get Me Roger Stone. Oh, there's something that's not in that movie that's kind of interesting, is that his first political action was for a Democrat, but that's not the interesting thing. It's that he liked Kennedy in kindergarten, and he told the other kids in kindergarten that Nixon wanted to make school be 6 days a week and have it on Sundays. So all the kids, he's like, that was my first lie, and I'm very proud of it. And I got the whole class pro-Kennedy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He said, yeah, it was the mock election that was held after that. It was a big surprise to everybody.
Yeah.
They all expected it would be.
Oh, that was in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because
I've been reading up on it, too. Yeah, okay. It all kind of runs together, but...
I knew of him, and I remember hearing stories about him. But man, that guy, to say he is a little full of himself would be an understatement. Yeah.
Well, he's helped influence every election since Nixon, and he is one of the reasons Trump is president. And he claims to be a libertarian. He's kind of, you know.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I mean, he's a Republican who wants to smoke pot, basically, I think. But he's not anti-gay marriage, which what sensible person would be. But I described him to you before you saw the movie as kind of like watching a car crash into the American political system for 50 years. He's you can't stop watching. Get Me Roger Stone. It's what do you think, Phil?
Well, the guy's a sociopath, and honestly, I don't know why. I mean, I don't necessarily believe that he is even not against gay marriage, because he's a compulsive liar. So
yeah.
I don't see why anybody would believe a single word out of his mouth.
My favorite part was when he introduced his 90-year-old mother and said, "She's great. You ever see The Sopranos? She's like Tony's mother."
Yeah.
Right.
That's horrible.
Worms.
Tony's mother is horrible.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, starting Thursday, June 22nd, and going through Monday, June 26th. That's right, Liberty Fest is getting longer and stronger. There will be presentations, discussions, bacon duels, and outdoor activities in an environment that is both family and grown-up friendly. There will be special appearances by Jeffrey Tucker, Dana Martin, and a few of the Freedom Fiends. If you have only talked about what a free society would look like, this is your chance to live it and see it with your own eyes. Now round up your friends and family and get them registered today at mplfest.org. And there's a discount for paying with Bitcoin. That's mplfest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Me, Roger Stone.
Wow.
I like this movie. Get Me, Roger Stone. Get Thee, hence Roger Stone.
I like the Nixon smoking apparatus that he had in his.
Oh closet. Yes, his most prized, one of his most prized possessions.
Nixon bong.
Yeah, right. He had two of them. I think he said, but One of them.
Well, I think
was
he had a couple bubblers, and
yeah,
you know, I asked Ben Stone jokingly, "So are you related to this guy?" And he said, "No, but we've exchanged some emails," which I found very interesting. So I forget where he got the email from. Maybe through Lou Rockwell or something, but he got Roger Stone's email like 5 or 6 years ago, I think, and was. I don't know what it was about. Maybe Ben was writing a book or something. I don't know. He wanted quotes from Roger Stone about something, or, you know, his, what do you think about blah, blah, blah. And they got along well, sort of. And then when Trump was running and Roger Stone was working with him, Ben wrote him something about, like, really, you know, you claim to be a Liberty guy. What's going on here? And Roger Stone got really mad at Ben Stone. So there you go.
How did Roger Stone ever get the
moniker of Liberty?
Being a Liberty guy.
Because he says he is.
Yeah.
Because he's a Republican who's not, who says he's not gay marriage and probably smokes pot. You know, owns bongs, at least.
Well, Phil, you started to say that in the last segment. And somebody, one of the guys who was there who was kind of criticizing him through most of the movie, one of the journalists, the I can't remember the guy's name, the guy who had the glasses and the short, curly, gray hair and the little beard thing. But he was saying that he thinks that at this point, Roger has, like, convinced himself that he's against the drug war. He's convinced himself that he's for gay marriage. It's like, it was one of those things at the beginning that, yeah, he probably didn't have any, he may have not had strong feelings one way or the other, but he just kind of like put himself there because it was convenient for his purposes. And now all these years later, he's kind of convinced himself that this is who he's always been. So it's hard to even tell if anything about him is sincere because he has spent his entire career lying and doing so proudly.
Yeah. Well, the best liars convince themselves of their own lies. I mean, that's how compulsive liars work.
Yes, true. Very true.
Yeah. And
maybe he was trying to... Go ahead.
Well, I just think he's a nihilistic sociopath. I don't think he has any real values.
Yeah, and I think he might have also been trying to impress the film crew, because he kept introducing the film crew to each new person, you know, as, oh, this is the film crew. They're a bunch of
liberal,
communist, pinko. Homosexual pinkos from New York City or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he did that at least three times. I remember him doing that through the movie. But
yeah,
I'm going to irk you guys by saying I don't think he was totally charmless. I kind of laughed.
Oh no, it's kind of hard. That's funny. I was just about to say that it's kind of like, as despicable as some of the stuff that he's been a part of really is, when you look at it, especially when it was broken down the way they did in this documentary, it's hard not to look at him and kind of be like impressed to a certain extent
because,
wow, the guy, he really is effective. he's charming.
That he like created a job that didn't exist. I mean, he kind of helped create lobbying.
Oh yeah, him, that kinda, firm they created.
You know, but he's more than a lobbyist. He's, you know, a lobbyist and, you know, a campaign, not really manager, more like campaign henchman or bagman, you know, like, I don't know what he is, but he's the man behind the curtain who doesn't like to stay behind the curtain. And the theory is that's why he's no longer on the Trump team, because Roger was giving interviews and Trump wanted to be in the spotlight only. Hey, we got a little problem here. I just sent you an email. You guys want to open this up? Somebody also just sent me something I didn't know.
Okay.
About Roger Stone and his... his latest
right now.
Project. Yeah.
Roger
Stone is wonderful, and we have nothing bad to say about him. You got this, Phil? Did you open it up?
Well, we were talking about how charming he was it? Weren't we?
Yeah, so. He's great. Well, yeah, you know, if you called him evil and charming, he'd take it as a compliment. So, Roger Stone's radio show is apparently on our network, GCN, and I signed a contract that says we wouldn't talk ill of anybody. I honestly didn't know he was on GCN, so... So Worms. So go watch his movie. Buy his movie. Send him money.
Well, we were talking in pretty glowing terms about him, actually. So.
Well, if you call him an SOB, he likes it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I don't think he'll have a problem with it. Watch the movie.
Rebel?
It's on Netflix.
Was that the word he used?
Watch the movie on Netflix.
Yeah.
Get Me Roger Stone. Or is it, I call it Get Thee Hence Roger Stone.
Get Me Roger
Stone. That's funny, man. Wow.
I'm
don't care who you are. That's funny right there.
That's funny.
Oh, yes. I would recommend it, too. It was a good flick. Check it out.
It was.
Yeah.
Worth the watch.
I love the Freedom Fiends. But in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Belfouche, welcome Belfouche. Welcome Sundance.
This not is the Freedom Fiends.
Not home of the Sundance Film Festival. Go ahead. Not home of the Sundance Film Festival.
Broadcasting from Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017, in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah.
So we're back for the second hour. I'm Jeremy, here with Michael and Phil. And yes, welcome to Belfouche.
Belfouche.
The most fun town that we have on our station list to say every time.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
So
now that Tiffany Trump Kentucky has dropped us.
Yeah, that's all right. Belfouche is much cooler anyway. So
yeah. So before we go and talk about the legendary Stardust Cowboy and the Butthole Surfers, can you say that on radio for an hour? We're going to talk about Liberty, and then we'll at the top of the half hour we'll talk about Liberty too. So why is taxation theft? Clearly and concisely, gentlemen.
Oh, clear and concise. I don't do clear and concise. Phil?
Right. Go ahead, Phil.
Because if you don't do it, you'll get locked up or shot.
If you don't pay your taxes, you will get locked up or shot. Yeah, and people say, but that's crazy talk. You know, the explanation I hear a lot is that government enforces everything, taxes and nanny laws, at the threat of a gun, at the barrel of a gun. And, you know, people say, that's absurd. I've never had a gun pointed at me. Well, have you ever blatantly disregarded any laws and kept doing so? Because
exactly. Just because
that's the end result, is if you don't pay your taxes, they'll send you a letter. If you don't pay your taxes continually, they'll send you another letter. Eventually, if you ignore them, or especially if you write them and say, I'm not paying these, I don't have to, this is theft, they'll send a man to your house. They'll send a man with a clipboard to your house. And he will talk to you. And when you tell him, get off my property, he will come back within a few days or hours with other men who have guns. And if you say, nope, I'm not opening this door, they will kick in your door and they will throw you on the ground and hold a gun to your head and handcuff you and take you out. That's the end of, you know, the I don't want to pay taxes and won't pay taxes. And then they'll put you in a cage and then they'll take your house. And depending on how much you wiggle on their hook, they might put you in jail for a while, too.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, and if you continue to not be, not be apologetic for your actions and not take back the horrible things you said about their taxation, you can end up dying there like Erwin Schiff.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll shoot you on your property.
Well, no, they'll die in prison like Erwin Schiff.
Oh, Erwin Schiff. Yeah. But there was a couple in New Hampshire a bunch of years ago, that, like in the past probably 10 years, that had a standoff. I know some people from Free State Project were like bringing them food because they didn't leave their house for like 8 months or something. It was kind of like a really, really, really slow motion, Waco or more like Ruby Ridge.
Ruby Ridge.
They yeah, they wouldn't pay their taxes. They wouldn't leave their house. And, you know, they got the letters. They got the men at the door. They're like, get off our property. Finally, they went in with SWAT teams and killed him, I believe, because there was a rumor that, you know, who knows if it was true, that they had landmines on their property. So, you know, that's what the government wants to do if you have landmines on your property, is rush onto your property, apparently.
Yeah, that seems legit.
Yeah.
Well, it's for the children, you know. They got to protect.
Well, speaking of landmines and the children, I really like when Ron Swanson in the movie, in the show, you guys know what I'm getting at, in the show, what's that show? 30 Rock? No.
Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen that. I know who the character is.
There's a great scene. He's a small government, really small government.
Yeah, no,
libertarian,
I've seen
gun nut guy
who
basically runs City Hall or City, all of the infrastructure. And he says that he won't leave his job because he does things so slowly that if he leaves his job, government will speed up and become more efficient. So he's worked there for like 30 years. And, you know, people make fun of him and stuff. But at one point, you know, they're out somewhere and, you know, somebody needs a bunch of money. They're in jail or something. And he's like, oh, I'll pay their bail. You know, they're like, it's $200,000. Well, that's okay. You know, I've been buying an ounce of gold once a month since I was 14 years old, working in a machine shop. You know, I could afford, like, it turns out he's a millionaire, but he's still going to his job every day because he likes clogging up government. So he's crazy, but he's also, you know, saved a bunch of money and he's rich now. But there's a scene where this little girl wanders into City Hall and goes into his office and says, you know, I'm writing a school report. And he's like, oh, get out of here. What's the school report about? And he's like, why government is good. And he gets this evil smile on his face. And he's like, come in. and, you know, she starts asking him questions. And he's like, okay, you want to know about government? And he grabs her lunch pail, opens it up, eats half her sandwich and says, I'm government. And hands the lunch pail back to her. And then she's like almost crying and doesn't get it. And he explains it. And like, she instantly understands taxation is theft and becomes a libertarian on the spot. And she's probably 9. And when she's leaving, he says, wait, I have a present for you. And he gives her a Claymore mine, anti-personnel mine. And she says, what's this for? And he says, to protect your property. And of course, you know, her mother comes back in screaming and, you know, you gave my daughter a landmine. He's like, well, it's not a landmine. It's an anti-personnel mine, ma'am. But, yeah. So that's Ron Swanson. I like that. And that kind of really sums up, you know, what is government? It's the thing that bullies you and takes half your sandwich or 45% of your sandwich or, you know, depending on how you measure it, up to 90% of your, even more, like up to 98% or 95%. There's somebody who wrote a really good essay on why without government, we'd all be 8 times richer. And, you know, you could, that's in buying power. Like everybody could have a house 8 times as big or not be in debt or pay for anything they wanted pretty much.
Well, Bill Buport wrote a piece on that a year or two ago. Explaining that.
Well, he quit the Fiends, so he's graduated from radio hospice.
Yes, but he explained that it's actually like the effective rate is essentially 100% or more when you add up everything you get taxed on, because you're taxed on every level of everything you buy. Like you're taxed for the production of the products that you buy on top of everything else.
I never really got how it gets to 100% or more, because you'd have nothing if it's more than 100%, but I think it's in the 90s.
Yeah, well, yeah. it's overall. Well, you're taxed on everything.
Die in debt. A lot of people die in debt too, so I guess that's how you could say it's more than 100.
And you're double taxed on things, and you know, you're taxed. You know, I mean, supposedly I thought Trump was supposed to get rid of that, but isn't the estate tax still a thing? Death taxes, stuff like that. So. You know,
if you make a certain amount, but also, you know, they say it only affects people who make over a certain 5 million or something or 3 million a year, but that's not true, because if you make just a little bit enough to leave your kids like, you know, $50,000-$60,000 or something, there's taxes because you don't have enough money to really effectively put it in shelters, you know?
Yep.
So you lose money.
Yeah, and even to leave, they charge you. There's an exit tax.
All right, let's talk about the Butthole Surfers. I think we've thoroughly explained that. Then we'll talk about the legendary Stardust Cowboys. So there was a band called the Butthole Surfers. Are you guys fans? You ever listen?
I remember them from youth.
Yeah,
youth.
I remember the name, and I remember them being talked about, but I never really listened to them. I think there's only that. I think there's probably like one or two songs that I actually know.
Yeah, there's a song of where there were. I always forget the name, but it's like
Pepper. It's Pepper.
Yes,
Pepper's their hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was sounded very unlike most of the Butthole Surfers, but you know, it's kind of weird. Like, so this band's been together since '81, and they're still together. And I saw them a couple times. I saw them in '84 or '85 when they played a club I was working at called Tracks in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I hung out with them and talked to them, and then I saw them. I don't know if I'd say open for, but on the same bill as Dead Kennedys. When I saw one of Dead Kennedy's last shows this wasn't one of the last shows. WUST Radio Hall in Washington, D.C., which was, I mean, it was a show with like 2,000 people or like 1,500, 1,600 people. And it was the Butthole Surfers, Dead Kennedys, my friend London May's band. What were they called? Reptile House. And I forget who else. I mean, it was two like starring bill bands, you know, Dead Kennedys and Butthole Surfers, and then some other bands. And it was a pretty weird show because it was a bunch of jocks, you know. It was like at this point, like the jocks had discovered Dead Kennedys and to a lesser extent Butthole Surfers, and you know, my tires got slashed at that show, and it was you know, people were getting crushed by violent slam dancing, not the happy kind of, you know, pick your friend up slam dancing that I grew up with.
Yeah.
So, you know, like the football teams, high school football teams had showed up and taken over the pits. And it was one of those shows that was big enough that there were several pits. Like, you know, when there's multiple tornadoes and you see it from the sky, I was up in the balcony. I could see there were like, you know, four different little pits. And, you know, they always do go counterclockwise in the Northern Hemisphere. I wonder if slam pits go clockwise in the Southern Hemisphere.
You know,
that would be an interesting experiment.
But when I saw the Butthole Surfers play at Tracks and I hung out with them, a couple things. One, I was like, they looked really high when they showed up. And I'm like, wow, what are you guys on? And Paul Leary, the guitar player, told me, let's see, a little bit of acid still from last night. I didn't sleep. A little speed, a little coke, a little LSD, some beer, some ether. You know, I mean, like he named this like, you know, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas list of drugs, and I believed him. I don't think he was making it up. And they were touring in a van. They mentioned this in this article that we read on Vice magazine or on Noisy.com, which is Vice's music magazine now, that their van was leaking carbon monoxide. And I remember them mentioning that. And it's like, oh yeah, and I'm on carbon monoxide. You have a head.
Oh yeah.
And I take all this other stuff for my headache because they didn't have $50 to go get their car fixed or something, or didn't know it was a problem. And
Let's
see what else about them. We also stayed at the drummer's house on tour. My band Bomb stayed at King Coffee's house in Austin. And this is kind of anticlimactic. It was like the most normal experience ever. Like he lived in a really normal studio apartment. He had some sleeping bags for touring bands. You know, he wasn't on tons of drugs. It was very quiet. He says, I'm going to bed. You guys can watch TV. Just keep it down low. Yeah. It was like this suburban. the myth is popped when they're home, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there. I didn't see you come in.
Hello.
You know, the Butthole Surfers taught me a great rock and roll lesson. And, you know, I don't know. Can you say that name on the radio? Because I remember the Butthole Surfers, when they were listed in newspaper ads for clubs, used to have, like, you know, B-U asterisk, asterisk, H-O-L-E, surfers, and things like that. You know, like, really? I remember Gibby Haynes, the singer, saying, like, in some interview, like, you know, I can't believe people have a problem printing this in the paper. My 76-year-old grandmother can say the name of my band.
You know, I would have expected them to put the star over the O and hole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think some that could have printed the whole name did that as a joke, probably. But
yeah, but the paper is a lot more strict about what they print usually in the. On the newspapers, like cartoonists,
than what?
Than
record,
have a
than
lot
radios?
Of issue. Yeah, well, than everybody.
Well, for one, there's a record of it more than with radio. People don't usually always tape radio and stuff, but also, newspapers really appeal to the lowest common denominator. Like, you'd think talk radio would, but people listening to talk radio are used to. There's a lot of crudity on talk radio. Like, even, you know. Like Rush Limbaugh, generally, you know, G-rated, will kind of get blue once in a while when he's talking about, you know, Hillary Clinton's alleged love life or something like that. You know, he'd say stuff that most people would think you shouldn't say to a, you know, 8-year-old. So talk radio is a little bluer than the paper a lot. The paper, first of all, are there still papers? I mean, Obama was talking about subsidizing them because they're so important in going out of business. But, I mean, even the local paper in my town of 60,000 people has a paywall. Like, that's how desperate papers are now. They can't get enough advertisement.
Well, the horrible, well, both newspaper and news station, local in my area are both behind paywalls for that very reason, because they're so hard.
I remember we found that out recently, but yes. We can't talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, but same reason though. Nobody's paying for it, so they have to try to do something.
Yeah. What's that, Phil?
Newspapers are so important that nobody reads them.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're quite handy for kindling and lining bird cages. I know that much. I've used them over the years for those purposes.
It's ironic, too, that even like the well-known ones aren't even known anymore. Because this buddy of mine, Ace Backwards, who's a cartoonist from Berkeley, who's actually homeless right now, who used to be kind of famous, or still kind of is. I mean, he was like syndicated in High Times magazine. And he did this kind of really apolitical, like he's not a libertarian per se, but he hates the left and right equally, and he's kind of punk and kind of hippie, and his cartoons were kind of punk and kind of hippie, and they're really funny and sardonic, and you know, they weren't in normal papers, but they were in High Times and some, you know, big underground papers and things like that. But so he recently posted on Facebook, you know, the UK Guardian has asked to interview me. I don't think I should do it. Who are these guys? You know, should I do this? And like,
whoa.
And like, you know, 10 of his friends, like 5 of them were like, oh, it's some lefty rag, you know, and don't bother with them. And somebody else is like, oh, yeah, I think I've heard of them, but I wouldn't bother. And I'm like, hey, they're kind of a lefty rag, but they're important journalism. And it's where Glenn Greenwald, you know, broke all the stuff from Edward Snowden. So you should do the interview. And he's like, okay, thanks. And I think he's going to do it. But, you know, I mean, that's one of the best known papers in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say.
People haven't heard of it.
I was going to say, even somebody like me who, you know, gets joked about being a Luddite most of the time and ignores a lot of this stuff. I mean, I know what The Guardian is. And, you know, even I'd be able to say, yeah, that's something you may want to look into, especially.
Yeah. Especially if you're homeless and, you know, looking
for if you're hoping for something that may turn your life around.
Yeah, because he's like living in the Oakland Hills with feral cats as companions, and he's half blind from glaucoma. Like, you know, maybe some of those, you know, lefty nannies that read that paper would throw you a few bucks or hire you or something, you know. But anyways, here's, you know, all the papers that that wouldn't print the name Butthole Surfers, half of them are out of business, and the Butthole Surfers still exist, and we're talking about them and can't remember the name of those papers. So yeah, but they taught me a valuable lesson too. When I was working at this bar, you know, I was supposed to like honor the rider. So they showed up and I brought them their beer and they started drinking at 4 p.m. Actually, they showed up at like 2. Like, they were there before the club opened. Like, we got there at like, you know, 4:30 to open up the club. because it was an early show. It was like 9, 8 p.m. or something, because it was a school night in a college town. And they, like, they'd just driven from, you know, getting thrown out of whatever the last town was, and they'd shown up. And I had to bring them their beer and their socks. And they put a bunch of clean socks in their rider, and I'm like, why that? Why? And then they said, if you ever go on tour, you'll understand. And I realized, you cannot change your clothes for a week or 10 days if you have clean socks. Good to know, people.
Worms.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Okay, worms. Yeah. Can't talk about that. Uh-huh.
Fortunately, we're easy to get a CCW.
It was the first state. Washington was the first state with shall issue. It's commonly believed to have been Florida, because in the 80s, a lot of tourists were getting murdered because, a lot of people in Florida have always carried guns, whether it's legal or not, but gangs started targeting people with rental cars in Florida in the 80s.
When the cocaine wars,
yep. Yeah. And
yeah, that was so, I can't drive on, or no, I'm mixing up songs, but there was a song written about I-95 and how dangerous
I can't drive on I-95.
His lesser known,
hit. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was on the mixtape he made to audition for Van Halen. It was never released. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Is actually a folk song.
Yeah. Oh, and what? Go ahead.
The song about, I can't remember what it was called or who did it, but there was a song that was specifically about how dangerous it is to drive on I-95. Huh. It was this relatively popular folk singer back in the 90s, 80s and 90s.
Luden Wainwright III?
No.
Okay.
I don't know who that is.
I do. So, I'll bet Legendary Stardust Cowboy is probably friends with him. The weird thing about Legendary Stardust Cowboy is that, like, T-Bone Burnett played drums on his first record. Okay, back to the Butthole Surfers. So,
so many names. I'm so confused.
The other thing that was funny about the Butthole Surfers playing in Charlottesville, Virginia at Trax, which was a cowboy bar, except one night a month or so, or whenever there was a touring punk rock band, I would book them there. It wouldn't matter what the bands were, because there were so few punk rockers, everybody would show up no matter what. Big bands played. Like, what's that New York band? Tough Guys, Yell Around, Yell A Lot. You know, that band from New York that's tough.
That helps.
Singer's name is Roger, was arrested for cocaine. Anyway, those guys played. I mean, those guys were fiercely popular, and they brought in like 90 people, you know. It was that kind of town. And so we'd put Hardcore Night out on the marquee. It just said Hardcore Night, like whether it was the Butthole Surfers, who weren't hardcore, or, you know, some hardcore punk rock band from New York. But it was funny because there's a term, hardcore country. So every time we said Hardcore Night, like two or three people would show up thinking it was country. And, you know, we'd tell them, like, if they looked country, the doorman would say, hey, you know, it's hardcore punk rock, not hardcore country. And sometimes they'd come in anyway, because it was like $4 to see the Butthole Surfers usually. You know, $2 for other bands and $4 for a band. No guarantees, you know, they'd play for the door, percentage of the door, no matter what. And the Butthole Surfers lived on tour. Like, they didn't have homes during this period. Like, they toured for like 5 or 6 years where, you know, they'd go stay with like relatives when they were off tour. Like, they were the hardest working band in weird and roll. And I that's why they're like, they're kind of a household word, like even before they were famous. Like there was a Simpsons reference, like it's mentioned in this article too. And they said, it's kind of funny because Chris Chris Novoselic from Nirvana said the same thing when we had him on the show. He said that, you know, like, even though he was famous and loved by millions and playing huge stadiums, he didn't really realize he was famous until he saw, like, a Nirvana reference on The Simpsons. And someone in the Butthole Surfers, in this article we're going to link in the show notes, said that, like, they didn't really feel like they'd made it until there's a reference on The Simpsons where Rod and Todd and Flanders lose their house to a tornado, and they're staying in, you know, the church rectory, and they're wearing clothes from the church poor box, and Rod is wearing this giant sweatshirt that's way too big for him, and he says, it says Butthole Surfers, and he's like, makes a motion like he's surfing, and he says, look, Daddy, I'm a surfer.
I think I remember that.
I remember that episode. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's kind of weird. Like, a friend of mine, Nick Barnett, sent me this article. Like, this seems like it might be right up your alley, Michael. And I'm like, oh, these guys. I know these guys, you know. And it's kind of weird to me to think, like, back then, I thought there would never be a time when people didn't know who the Butthole Surfers were, you know. It was kind of weird to me, for a friend of mine who's, like, 30-something, who's an adult, to say, like, oh, hey, you know about this era, Grandpa, to me, you know. But I guess it is. The band said, so they talk in this article about how they had this naked female dancer who performed with them, and they projected weird imageries of, like, eye surgery behind them, and I mean, they did things that, like, would put you in prison now. Like, they'd play an all-ages show and then strip naked and simulate sex. And they also, I liked how he said, like, when they were touring pre-EU Europe, a defenseless pre-EU Europe. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, like, everything they did, not just the nudity, but their whole thing, like, wouldn't, if they were still doing that in small clubs, like, kind of unknown now, like, they would be, I don't know, arrested, tarred, feathered, and put before a, you know, tribunal of the European Union or something. But they were like, you know, this talks about how this woman was their dancer, like she was the sixth member or something, or the seventh member, and they didn't think of her like that. Like, I was like, who's that lady? And they're like, oh, she's this girl that just started following us, and, like, you know, we don't give her rides. She drives in her car. She just shows up. And sometimes she pays to get in, and we don't really like her. And this morning, we let her stay in the hotel room last night, and I was sleeping on the floor because we didn't have enough beds. And this morning I woke up, and she was standing over me, like a foot over, like looking at me, just kind of like smiling. It was really creepy. So, you know, perception is everything, I guess.
Interesting. She's like a stray they just couldn't get rid of.
A stray woman followed. She followed us home. Can we keep her, Gibby? Yeah.
Well, as long as she doesn't pee on the carpet and you feed her, I guess.
She probably did. Yeah.
Kind of, strangely enough, that kind of reminds me of that scene from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with the girl that.
Oh, there is a girl that. Yeah, and one of them wakes up and she's over him watching him. Yeah. And she, yeah, I remember that. This woman was an adult, though, unlike that person in that story, right. Fear and Loathing. But speaking of Johnny Depp, there is a connection with the Butthole Surfers. So the singer of the Butthole Surfers, Gibby Haynes, or Hayne Haynes, had a band, a side project called P, just the letter P. And it was like him singing Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And Johnny Depp played guitar, I think. And that's the band that was on stage at the Viper Club when River Phoenix died of an overdose on the sidewalk out front.
That's kind of
an interesting, weird claim to fame. Our music kills movie stars. I don't know.
Yeah, I had forgotten all about P until I read that article. I was going, yeah, that's right. Now I remember that story.
Yeah. Wow. What did you guys think of the writing in this article? I hated it. Personally, I hate rock journalism. I haven't read any for 20 years.
Yeah, I had to go over some of it a couple of times.
It thinks it's clever, yeah. And I don't know. What is it? Frank Zappa said that rock journalism is people who can't write writing for people who can't read. And then somebody said writing about music is like dancing about architecture. And that's been misattributed to Elvis Costello, Brian Eno, and somebody else. I don't know, but it's a pretty good saying. But yeah, I haven't read any rock journalism in like 20 years. And, you know, this is Vice magazine. It's probably good rock journalism for what's considered good. But it's so clever. And it's so like writing about things that like happened before, that probably before the writer was born. It kind of reminds me of the way people write about the Civil War. It's kind of weird. But, you know, like historians who like the Civil War or like, you know, battles from ages gone by write about it. Kind of a hagiography, a celebration of the saints. Mm. What do you think, Phil? You're a smart guy.
I didn't read much of it, but the first bit of it was, I was already confused at the wording.
Yeah. My favorite thing in it, though, was something that someone in the band said, which was probably quoted pretty much word for word, which was great, which was that, was it Gary Gersh? Is that his name?
I think so.
Gary Gersh from Atlanta. Is it Atlantic veteran? What label was he from? Whatever label the Butthole Surfers were on, you know, like when they went to meet them, you know, like, oh, you know, we're on your label. Great. Oh, Capitol Records. You know, when they went gold, the label flew them out from Texas and invited them to, you know, for a party and a celebration and to receive their gold record and stuff. And he said that, you know, there were a bunch of people milling around in the wherever they were having this party in the record office, executive office. And Gary Gersh came up to one of them and said, like, hey, man, I just want to say congratulations, and I'm a fan of what you guys do. My name's Gary Gersh, by the way. You know, I really respect what you do. And the guy in the Butthole Surfers was like, wow, I really felt good about that. And he said 20 minutes later, the guy came up and said, hey, I'm Gary Gersh, and I'm the president of Atlantic Records, and I really respect what you guys are doing. I'm a fan. And he said that, like, summed up the whole thing, the whole experience of being on a big table. And I can see that. Yeah.
See, I read that, my first thought was conflicting. I was like, well, now is that because he just walks around saying that to everybody because he doesn't really care who these people are, or he was so high that he didn't remember having the conversation the first time around?
Why not both?
Well, there you go.
I don't want to imply that the president of Capitol Records ever took drugs. I'm not saying that. I don't know. Who knows? I've heard of Gary Gersh. I've had a meeting at Capitol Records when Baum was trying to get signed. When our manager was trying to get us signed, we went to a bunch of them. Went to all of them, and they're basically just offices. You know, a record company, a record label, major label. It's just like any other office I delivered to as a bike messenger, except there's, you know, rock posters in people's cubicles. And, you know, the dress code is a little different, but probably not that much different than the dress code, you know, in a lot of places. I mean, I, as a bike messenger, I went into a lot of offices in San Francisco that were casual dress back in the day, like, you know, early.com stuff. And even before that, like graphic arts places, which was kind of the hip and happening job before then. You know, there's also, I think, a possible inaccuracy in this article. The writer says that Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love met at a Butthole Surfers show. I heard it was at a Jane's Addiction show. I heard that from our manager, who was the manager of Jane's Addiction. But, you know, managers like to exaggerate, and everyone likes to claim that their band was the band that magical meeting happened at. So, yeah. Who knows?
Couldn't have been both.
Yeah. Why not both? Yeah. Oh, yeah, they could have been the same bill. That's very possible. Yep. It probably would have been Nirvana or Jane's Addiction opening for Butthole Surfers at that point, too.
Nice.
Believe it or not. Yeah. Worms, 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 worms.
Arms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hi, have you heard about Bipcoin? Not Bitcoin, but Bipcoin. Bravo, India, Papa, Coin. Bipcoin is a new cryptocurrency that you can start mining today for free on ordinary computers. Unlike most altcoins, Bipcoin is not a clone of Bitcoin. Bipcoin is based on entirely new, more recent, and better code called CryptoNote. So unlike Bitcoin, Bipcoin has truly untraceable transactions, does not require specialized mining rigs, and has adaptive limits. Plus, Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency covered by the BIPCOT no government license. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. If you're still kicking yourself in the head for not getting in on the ground floor of Bitcoin, start mining, using, and trading Bitcoin today.
Not a guarantee.
Mining Bitcoin costs you nothing but the electricity to run your computer. And we already take Bitcoin for stickers and buttons. Go to Bitcoin.org. That's Bitcoin.org. Once again, that's Bravo India Papa Coin.org.
Yeah.
Worms.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're back.
Yeah.
So, are we done talking about the butthole suffers, Michael?
Yeah, and taxation is theft. We haven't said that in a while. But
it's been almost a whole hour.
It's been almost a whole hour. We're going to talk about the legendary Stardust Cowboy, who was, is, an act, who performed naked in the 60s and still does at age 80 or something like that, 69.
Sexy.
Sexy. Hey, you know, probably... Anyway,
I bet he does yoga.
I'll bet he does, too. He looks like he might. So he was an influence on David Bowie, which is kind of the main point here. But he's interesting aside from that. He's been making music since 1961, and he's had the name, called himself Legendary Stardust Cowboy since 1961. Which some people say legendary Stardust means LSD, which he looks like he may have taken, but he says he came up with the name before he heard of LSD in 1961. And he always liked the West, and he always liked space travel. And he was born before man went to the moon and really liked the idea that someday man would go to the moon. But he's also a cowboy. So describe his music. So he heard a video, which you're going to link.
So wait a minute. He was a space cowboy before Steve Miller.
So they say that he was an early pioneer in psychobilly, which is a kind of music. But I think he's also a pioneer in cowpunk, which we've talked about before on the show. And this song that we're going to link of him from this TV show in the 70s, it's really weird. It's this British Saturday morning show where there's commentators, like BBC-style voices, like making fun of him while he plays. Like, yes, and that was some of the worst dancing I've seen since... It was really weird, but he's performing just, like, insane, looking insane, with an insane-looking and sounding band with a big flag of Texas in back of him. And the music reminds me of the music in... Walk Hard, when they say that Dewey Cox invented punk rock, when he breaks up with his wife and he does cocaine for the first time and he's all angry, and at sound check he's like, louder, faster, and he's screaming the lyrics to his country song. and someone in the band stops and they're like, you sound like some kind of punk. No one's going to want to listen to that music. But it sounds like that song to me, which kind of sounds like cowpunk. But what did you guys think of the video?
It was trippy, man.
Yeah.
I guess you could call that music.
Yeah. Well, I liked it, but I liked the Butthole Surfers. And before they sounded kind of musical and trip-hoppy in that song Pepper, have you heard their first few records? And I really liked them, and like, no. I remember my friend Brian Childers, who was in Bomb and was in... the singer in Beef People and was briefly in Bomb as a bass player and backup singer on one tour. And he also is the scream at the beginning of Happy All the Time, Power Suggestion, where it goes, aah! And then the song starts. You know, that's Brian. But he said one time he saw the Butthole Surfers at some club in New York, and he said that in the middle of the set, like, somebody threw a beer bottle at the band, and it hit Gibby, the singer, like square in the head and knocked him unconscious. And he just, like, he's playing guitar and singing, and he just, and there were strobe lights on stage that they brought with him. And he just kind of, like, you just saw him, like, in slow motion, tip completely black back forward and just bang, land on his back, unconscious on the stage. And he was unconscious for like 30 or 45 seconds. And when he hit, the guitar made this noise like ka-chunk, and they had all these echoes on everything, on the guitars and on the vocals, and so it went like ka-chunk, 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 until it was just like shaking the room and louder than the band. And then he kind of like woke up and stumbled up and turned it off. But you know, they've got some legendary Stardust Cowboy in them too. But tell me about the David Bowie connection, Phil, with the legendary Stardust Cowboy.
Well, so the way David Bowie tells the tale is he listened to their song. I forget the song. I think it's the one that you sent me. Something about space.
Yeah.
Right. And he actually named Ziggy Stardust after this legendary Stardust Cowboy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were on the same label, like Bowie's first label when he was unknown and he was an acoustic musician. I think it was Mercury Records. Yeah.
Right.
When you get signed a lot, they'll give you whatever records they have on their label as a gift. You know, that's why we didn't sign with Atlantic. The guy had some records to give us, and we were like, we want the complete Led Zeppelin connection right now. And he's like, I don't have the key. I could send them to you. And we're like, okay, we're going with Warner Brothers.
Paralyzed was the song, by the way.
Yeah. Paralyzed. It's just Paralyzed, just screamed over and over with... Back when, you know... Songs about insanity were all the rage, and they're coming to take me away, and meow.